From the land to Grand Theatre University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 30th day of March, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Tug Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. We'll take a closer look at the beef trade across the western part of the United States and the strike that's happening at the JBS processing plant in Greeley, Colorado. Then we'll turn our attention to the weather forecast as we wrap up our time together. We'll talk with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics, and we'll do all of that on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online, on demand at willag.org. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
May corn for the day at $4.55¾, finished 6¼ cents lower. July, that's at $4.67½ at the end of the day, finished down 6. And new crop December, $4.84 a bushel, 6¼ cents lower. May soybeans at $11.59¾, up a half cent. July, $11.75, down a quarter. November beans, $11.44, unchanged. May bean meal at $3.14.90, down 40 cents. Bean oil at $68.47, $1.06 higher. Wheat futures, July soft red, that's the harvest month, at $6.18¾ of a cent, up 2¾. And the July hard red at $6.40¾, 6¾ of a cent lower. Live cattle futures in Chicago at the CME Group, that is $240.20 for 100 pounds. It finished $1.42½ higher. Feeders at $361.32½, up $1.50, and lean hogs down 25 cents at $105.87½. Crude oil at $102.78 a barrel. That's in the WTI, up $3.14. The Brent crude oil, that's $107.29, up $1.97. Diesel fuel or heating oil, 3 cents lower at $4.26 of a cent per gallon. And the wholesale price of gasoline today at $3.26¢, about 7¢ of a cent higher. S&P 500 down 15 points, the NASDAQ off 145, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 131 points at this hour. Kurt Kimmel is now here to take a look at the marketplace and what happened in Chicago. Hi, Kurt. Thanks much for being with us. Hope you had a great weekend.
Oh, boy. Flew by, especially if you watch basketball. There was some good games to keep everybody interested. And I guess most of the challenge right now is trying to find some tickets to Indy here as we approach that benchmark real quick.
Yeah, I bet. The Illini won again. I did watch the end of that Purdue game. That was too bad. I really thought and was hopeful that Illinois and Purdue actually would both be in the Final Four, but not to be the case. Now, let's turn your attention to the marketplace in Chicago. Anything of a real importance happened over the weekend after the losses that were suffered? By the way, good job by you and Dave Chatterton and company on Commodity Week picking the RVOs as buy the rumor, sell the fact, because Friday was not great for soybeans.
Yeah, we finished a little firmer there. You know, the trade's still kind of digesting the situation. The biggest, you know, uncertainty is feedstocks coming into California. But overall, the long-term picture is still optimistic from the standpoint that we're going to go down the soybean oil path here, hopefully to replace some export demand that we could possibly lose from Asia, Todd, there. But the main focus, of course, here on Monday's close is going to be Tuesday's quarterly grain stocks report and the acreage intentions report. That'll take center stage as we go into Tuesday's trade.
What are you expecting? Better yet, what is the trade expecting, I suppose? Because it really will matter where they are and where those numbers come out.
Yeah, the average guess is about where the ag market team's at, 94.4. There's ideas maybe that could be maybe another 500,000 bushels higher than that, around 95. Corn market closed lower today, 6 cents, and so they might be anticipating a little larger number than that. The soybean acreage estimate guess is 85.5. The ag market team's around 86 1.1. If you go back in history, everybody's got some analog years or statistics or how low, how high, but on the corn number, it's been off as much as 800,000 acres, seems like, as it's about as close as it's been is probably the best way to explain it. So these are intentions. What materializes, we'll see as we move forward. As we've seen the reports here in the fall, late summer, fall into early winter, those numbers were even adjusted more. So particularly harvested acres. So, you know, there's a lot of zigging and zagging in here, but this will be the benchmark to go by, and else would add and subtract that yield from that number there and come up with some demand numbers, and we'll eventually see some type of ending stocks estimates for the 26 crop here as we move into the spring.
When you think about the war with Iran and how long it might last, what do you see happening in the marketplace in either a we're finished now very quickly or a it lasts for months kind of scenario?
Well, as far as the war in general, I think there's always going to be some type of activity there. I don't believe they're just going to roll over and surrender or give up. I think there's going to be some resistance for quite some time. But overall, if there would be a conclusion or agreement, I believe you take some volatility out of the marketplace and see the market pull back quite a bit, particularly in the energies. But at the pump, I think it's just going to be a long, drawn-out process. I believe these energy prices or gasoline prices are going to stay firm, particularly as you go into summer travel season here. So it's affecting the economy longer term here. If we don't see some quick results, the stock market particularly starting to factor that in.
Anything from the livestock side I should know about before I let you go?
Well, we had some strength here, some follow-through strength. A big day there Friday, particularly in the fats and feeders, so we're seeing some follow-through there. We're starting to gear up for cookout season here. As long as the weather cooperates, I think the consumer's just going to go to the grocery store shelf and buy something to put it on the grill and not worry about the price.
Hey, thanks much. We appreciate it.
You bet. Take care, Todd.
You too. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joined us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world, online on demand at willag.org, willag.org. We're at 11 a.m. Central Time tomorrow. You'll find an update, or not long thereafter, of the USDA prospective plantings and grain stocks figures. That'll be under the USDA tab. Again, that's at willag.org, willag.org. The USDA March 31 reports are due out at 11 a.m. Central Time. Do join the agricultural economists from the Farm Doc team, Scott Irwin and Joe Jansen, tomorrow at 1 o'clock p.m. for a free webinar post-report from the United States Department of Agriculture. The prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers are due out at 11 a.m. Joe and Scott will have an in-depth look at if and how any of those numbers might have changed, and you can keep track of it as well. The webinar is absolutely free. You can sign up on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Let's revisit today the worker strike taking place at the JBS plant in Greeley, Colorado. We've talked about this in the past. However, my colleague at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, Cesar Delgado, a couple of weeks ago, spoke with Charlie Martinez from the University of Tennessee and Dave Weber, who is with Terrain Ag. That is part of the Ag Credit Services servicing the Dakotas and Kansas and Colorado, some other places, I think, into Iowa as well, about the beef supply, the drought in the western part of the United States, and the JBS plant closure because of the strike. We'll start with what that strike meant at the time. Charlie Martinez, again with the University of Tennessee, an agricultural economist there, will begin our conversation.
Yeah, I think whenever we think about that strike in itself and we think about the supply chain and how it's laid out, the strike itself, I think, is going to have more of a short-run impact at the fed cattle level. But if it, the longer it goes, the more impact it can have on feeder cattle markets. Specifically, if we just think about fundamentals of demand and supply, packing plant not operating, or company not operating, that decreases demand. Demand decrease, we have price decrease.
You know, usually take time to decode things, but let's do that. Fed cattle are those cattle that have been fed out and are ready for market. Feeder cattle, of course, are just exactly what they sound like, calves that are being fed and headed to market eventually, probably a few months out. Now, here's Cesar Delgado.
Dave, you got a front row seat of it. What is your position on the technicals on the fats?
Oops, I'm sorry. There are some interchangeable words here. Fed cattle or fat cattle or live cattle are all the same thing. Now, here's Dave Weber. He is with Terrain Ag.
Yeah, the strike and the ongoing impact seem to be kind of a slow-moving grind, with the contract having been expired back in last July. There's been risk of this coming. I think the feed yards that supply the plant have been kind of on edge and alert to the coming events. The cattle that were supposed to be slaughtered there last week, we didn't kill anything last week in the plant before the strike even started, have been reallocated to other JBS facilities. I would expect that Grand Island and the Cactus, Texas Dumas plant would have taken the bulk of those cattle. The live cash trade in Colorado isn't large, so that means those are all contracted, committed cattle. So JBS was kind of obligated to take them. I imagine there's some freight allowance, some kinds of those things going on to get those cattle moved. The challenge probably becomes more of a Texas-Nebraska problem. Because now those cattle are filling in what would have been cash trade into those other JBS facilities. And then they're probably pushing some cash trade into some other plants as well. If you look at Southeast Colorado, maybe some cattle going into Finney County and Dodge City, those kind of places, maybe Liberal as well. So we're going to start to see those cattle supplies probably, bolster Texas, maybe to an advantage, get their slaughter numbers filled up.
I'll drop back in here for a moment because I did talk to Dave Weber earlier today about the economics of the slaughter plants. He says since the beginning of this JBS strike by its workers, the economics have shifted from losing money to making money. A lot of that has to do with total inventory and at what capacity the plant is operating.
I think as we look at the total inventory, near-term effects are probably more psychological, long-term worries about the resizing of packing capacity, which we've been thinking is going to be coming. I mean, Tyson did their part on the closure of Lexington, single shift in Amarillo. We're still over capacity compared to the cattle numbers. And until we see this drought break and the growth in beef replacement heifers and cow-calf operation numbers, we probably continue to see a grindingly slow decline in available feeder cattle and calf supplies.
I did take a moment when I was talking with Dave Weber this morning to ask him if the cattlemen in the western part of the United States were concerned about long-term drought. Remember, if you've listened for a while, you know that USDA in 2019-2020 held a webinar that pointed towards the changing climate and the possibility that long-term drought, decades long, rather than maybe a few years long, might take hold in the western United States. He said, yes, they were. Now, here's Cesar Delgado again.
How about you, Charlie? Do you have some concerns about economic growth?
I think, kind of tailing with what Dave said, I kind of think he did a good job of just highlighting some of the more broad macro movers that impacts one, the demand side of things for beef. But if we look at just, any industry, if you look around, I think the uncertainty around a lot of things is one of the things that, regardless if you're in agriculture or not, is impacting what, with the decisions that you're making today throughout the rest of the year. One thing we've learned over the last year is you can have fundamentals to a T and know everything that's going to happen fundamentally. But then a news outbreak or a geopolitical movement can alter a lot of things pretty rapidly. And, even to the point of a morning, a random morning to an afternoon can change a lot of things. I think when the question is, do I have any concerns? I don't think I have a quote unquote a concern, but it's more of, what can happen tomorrow or what can happen next week that we don't foresee happening right now. What is the unknown unknowns that can impact us? And so I think the one things that we do know, yesterday rates stayed where they were going to be because of what's been happening with the Iran conflict and inflation, kind of be still on the tip of the tongue of a worry out of the Fed Reserve. So, if we want to look at it from that perspective, it's a signal that inflation is still not going down because of things that are out of the control of a lot of folks, in particular geopolitical conflict. So, I think my concern more about what can happen into the in not only the next couple of months, but the rest of this year and even next year is just the uncertainty of random events happening that can cause disturbances throughout every market that you're looking at, whether it is agriculture or not agriculture.
That's Charlie Martinez. He is an agricultural economist at the University of Tennessee and spoke with Cesar Delgado a couple of weeks ago. Our thanks, by the way, go to Cesar for providing me the audio with Charlie and Dave Weber, who is with Terrain Ag. That's an affiliated company of the Farm Credit Services that serve the western part of the United States. Let's turn our attention to the global growing regions. We'll stay in the Northern Hemisphere today with Mark Russo. He's at Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi there, Todd. Thanks for having me.
I'd like to begin in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the Plains States. I know there are difficult issues in, or have been at least, in Colorado and Kansas, Oklahoma, Nebraska area. Can you tell me about them?
For the Plains hard red winter wheat belt, that's really the problem area right now for crops in the U.S. due to extreme soil moisture deficits, much of which have really those deficits have increased significantly over the past few weeks. If you go back over the winter, parts of Kansas fared well with precipitation, but the rest of the hard red belt did not do really well. And then once we've gotten into the past month or two, then virtually the entire plains was bone dry and also temperatures at record levels. And so that has depleted soil moisture significantly. Puts a great emphasis on rain activity improving across the region to improve soil moisture as crops are accelerating through spring growth with this well above normal and in some cases record temperatures that are prevailing across the region. So that is the main item of note right now in the plains.
And then turn your attention to the Midwest, the Corn Belt in particular. What do you see for the planting season?
Yeah, right now we see favorable weather, especially looking out from now through and into the remainder of April. And so one of the keys here is that in recent weeks, we've seen soil moisture improve significantly across the Midwest. So that has been very timely for boosting soil moisture. Pattern over the next 2 weeks is active, so that will further boost soil moisture. Temperatures, though, will be a little bit warmer bias. So we're not seeing any turn to any unseasonably cold temperatures that would prevail for any extended periods of time. And even with this wetter outlook, the next couple of weeks, we think that things start to ease after that. So right now, it's looking quite good here for summer crop planting here in the Midwest.
By active, are we hit or miss, or are we everybody gets something? And if that's the case, how much?
Yeah, there's several storm systems that will be moving across the Midwest over the next few weeks. So they do look to produce more widespread significant rains. Now, some of the rains are going to be in convective in nature. In other words, thunderstorms developing. So that will at times result in some, you know, scattered storm activity. So a few areas may miss out, but due to these more kind of potent systems coming through, it does look like the vast majority of acreage will be picking up meaningful rain.
What is the primary driver?
Primary driver is that there's some actually colder air to the north up across Canada, the northern tier of the U.S., but it looks to stay up in that area rather than plunging southward. So you have that one feature to the north, and then south of that is the unseasonably warm temperatures. And so that kind of gradient across, temperature gradient across the Midwest, and let alone much of the, you know, central and eastern U.S. with anomalous cool weather to the north, anomalous warmth to the south, that is a good setup for active conditions and abundant precipitation.
And that pool of cool weather to the north has dipped into the Midwest, deep into the United States occasionally since last November. Any reason to think it might do that again? And if so, when?
Yeah, we don't see any significant risks for that. A lot of it is just the time of season. When you have more of those bigger dips of Arctic cold coming in from Canada, you need the polar vortex to be elongated or highly unstable. And while we did see that over the winter, and it still is a little bit unstable right now, the polar vortex basically dissipates as you move through the month of April. So we're not seeing any kind of big stretches of the vortex for this time of year. And so, you know, you can still have it in Canada, like we're going to see, but to push it further south into the middle latitude ag belts or lower 48 or places like southern Europe or China, it just becomes really tough to do here at this stage of the season.
Finally, check in on the Black Sea area, the growing regions of Russia and Ukraine.
Yeah, they're in pretty good shape here right now from a winter crop development standpoint, as well as pre-planting conditions for summer crops. Now, for soil moisture, you know, last year, those areas of Europe and the Black Sea region, especially Eastern Europe and the Black Sea region, you know, had very dry conditions. And that has resulted in low subsoil moisture. But over the winter, and even dating back to last fall, we did see improvements in topsoil moisture. So that has helped to reduce some of the dryness, but it has not fully replenished subsoil moisture. So that's the only thing to keep an eye on for Eastern Europe and the Black Sea region. But from a pattern standpoint here coming up, from an opportunity standpoint, there are systems that are going to increase precipitation across much of those areas. So we do feel that as we move into April, that subsoil moisture will be improving there.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
That's Mark Russo. He is with Everstream Analytics. Helped us to wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that came to you from Illinois Public Medium, online on demand at WILLAG.org. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.